Who are you?
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zata Jewelers. KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
They've got something new now. It's called the Press Box.
You're back in the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Back on the box, one in the books, two to go, second hour of the show. It's Nick and myself taking you through a Tuesday in the big city. Nicholas, is he ready to go? Well, then, with no further ado, because this one's always special to me and close to my heart, the man, the myth, the legend, the man that is long overdue going to the Hall of Fame very soon has decided to block out some time for us. He is sitting in boxer shorts and a tank top, no doubt, somewhere in Florida, but joining us via the hotline, my man Rudy Tomjanovich. Coach, always great to catch up with you. No better time than coming up on the heels of this massive moment with you finally getting into the Hall. Congratulations, and just kind of like your thoughts as we get closer to that day.
Joel, it's always a pleasure for me to be with you and on your show, but is it okay? I don't have the boxers on.
You do, well, please don't tell me it's a banana hammock or like bikini briefs. I'm not. I don't want that visual.
Yeah, well, I can't tell you then.
Hey, Coach, whatever makes you comfortable. It's retirement years.
That's right. That's right. Well, I'm back working again, so.
Oh, that's right. The Timberwolves.
That's right.
So you've got a young team to work around, but I mean, going back to, because obviously everyone in Houston, and you know from the organization itself and all the players, Bull and Mario and so many of the guys lobbying over and over, like it took way too long, but now you're going in and what they're saying is arguably the greatest class of all time. And I want to know kind of from your thoughts, because you had to hear some of that as well, but just when you finally got that call and knew that that day was coming.
Yeah, waiting for this to happen was very interesting, because I didn't really think about it until, you know, that time of the year when I would start getting calls about how I felt and things like that. But all the people who spoke up for me, I cannot thank them enough for making me feel so good. And, you know, my players, but then the brotherhood of coaches, Coach Pop, Mike D'Antoni, Scotty Brooks, and Jeff Van Gundy has been, speaking up for years.
Yes.
And I have a lot of gratitude to those guys.
I'm curious, Coach, because you mentioned some of the names, but when you go back and look at some of your ex-players and how they have now succeeded, whether it be Kenny on TV, Scotty Brooks and others coaching, and you knew, I think back in the day, that the kind of role players that you were bringing in were good basketball minds. They might not have been the all-star player, but you knew what you were getting in terms of the person, the personality, and more importantly, the basketball acumen, so that you knew what kind of guy was going to fit into your Rockets teams.
You're absolutely right, Joel. And had really good people, had guys that understood the game, that loved the game. And, you know, it's great seeing Mario out there. He's helped several teams. Scotty Brooks, you know, doing another great year, getting that team fighting into the playoffs. Kenny, it's great to see him. You know, he comes into our homes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even Charles, you know, he wasn't on those teams, but he was a Rocket. Just unbelievable feeling. And that family feeling of being connected to these guys.
Now, Rudy, and we're speaking with Rudy Tomjanovich on ESPN 97.5. In those championship years, on those particular teams, was there any player that stood out and just impressed you and said, you know what, this guy is a lot better than I thought he'd be?
Well, You know, it's interesting. When I look at a player, I accept the positive. And I think about, you know, I don't want to dehumanize them, but I think about the weapon that they can be. And that's sort of how I looked at things and how can I use their talents to help our team, or what can I do in setting up a system that will help this player be the best he could be, you know. And just so many of them just fit in so well. And I always try to be open-minded on what kind of things to run. You know, of course, when we had Akeem, he's the main guy, and 70-80% of the time, you know, I'm going to go to him. But then we found the right guys to put around him, great shooters. You know, Kenny was a phenomenal shooter for us. Then we got Clyde to take pressure off of Dream. After the New York series, which for one player, I would say that was probably the most physical series anybody has had to go through. They were tag-teaming on Hakeem, and that's when you could play physical. And after that year, we said, we've got to find a way to take some of that punishment off of him. And he stood up for, you know, he never complained, but we didn't want to wear him out.
Now, Rudy, you bring this up, and you brought up two different people that I always refer to the fact that back in the day, we were a family. You let Worrell and myself and guys that would go to shoot around sit in with the team on the meetings, and I remember you and I flying to Phoenix for the All-Star game and you grilling me about Clyde because I had worked with him before you made that trade. And now you and you look at sports today, you look at the Aaron Rodgers situation in Green Bay, you look at Deshaun Watson here in Houston, and you wonder, because I was in some of those meetings with you, why has it become like taboo to do what you used to do, which is if I'm going to make or I'm thinking about making a move that's going to affect my team, why wouldn't I go to my best player or players and run it by them and know what their thoughts are before I make a mistake?
Yeah, absolutely. Chemistry is so important. And if you wind up bringing in somebody that you never know if guys have a past with somebody, usually you do, but, you know, anything can happen. With a big trade like that, you got to talk to your main guy. And, of course, Clyde was just perfect fit. I don't think there's anybody in the league that could have pulled it off, you know, because we were so dependent on Akeem that another star would come in and say, you know, hey, you got to give me some of that. And we did, but their relationship was the key that we pulled the trigger on that deal.
And I'm curious, T, because you now have time to reflect, and we did it back when we celebrated the 25th anniversary of the titles too, but as you now look back at another monumental moment in your career, and then you look back in history, are there certain, not necessarily all just the success stories, but certain things that happened that stick into your mind and say, if that doesn't happen, maybe we don't win that one or we have as much success? Because to me, there's several. It's the Jake O'Donnell situation with Clyde in Phoenix when we came back, when Clyde looked like he was on his deathbed and he showed up, but then O'Donnell had come at Clyde. He never would referee another game, but the team kind of used his motivation. Or even the series in Utah when we sent Vernon home and how difficult that was on you and the staff, but how it kind of galvanized the rest of the team.
Yeah, there were things like that, you know. You know, I thought a very pivotal situation was the first game in Orlando. Mm-hmm. During the regular season, they had owned us. They pretty well took care of us easily. And then they were doing it again. And we hung in there. And if Kenny doesn't make that shot, yep, put us in overtime, you know, we might not be talking about you know, back-to-back. And we love the kiss of death shot from the corner. with Mario, but that shot that Kenny made was just as big, and a lot of people don't talk about it.
Now, I'm not before Nick's got another question for you. Before I get off of that subject, the one thing that I'm not going to let you get off, because I know you won't blow your own horn. You mentioned game one against Orlando. I'll tell you this, another one that sticks in my mind is shoot around before game two, because your guys were feeling their oats. There was no pain. They were yucking it up, and you pulled them to center court and said, basically, guys, if you don't get your bleep together, you're going to get your butt kicked by 20 tonight, and you have no idea after what happened in game one what you could be facing if you keep this attitude. And I saw every face on that court get serious, and before you knew it, they came out and just absolutely waxed Orlando.
Yeah, I thought we had happy feet, and you can't let a talented team, you can't relax on a talented team like Orlando was. I mean, they had so many great players, and I'm glad that got across, because it was right there. And our guys, they were fantastic. And they took care of business, you know, every game after that. And but it wasn't that, you know, we got the sweep, but it wasn't that one-sided. Those guys could have won any of those games. I think they might have had the lead in just about every game, you know, late in the game. So that was the execution that we pulled off there was just amazing.
We're speaking with Rudy Tomjanovich here on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN975.com. Now, I don't know if you've heard the news, but longtime broadcaster of the Houston Rockets, Bill Worrell, will call his final game this season, and you obviously had some experience with him. So two questions. A, your thoughts on Bill Worrell, and B, should Vernon Maxwell take a spot?
Could what?
Could Vernon Maxwell take his spot as the broadcaster?
Oh, could take his spot?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I thought you said kick his butt.
We already know the answer to that, Coach.
Yeah. Bill's a tough hombre, I'm telling you. I love Bill. You know, we get so used to the rhythm and the cadence of our announcers, and he's one. And, you know, you go back and you see some of the highlights, and they'll have him and Murph speaking in the, you know, on the play. And he's had a great career. I'm looking forward to seeing. I've seen him a couple times when he comes to Austin. I'm looking for the future to having a lot of fun with old Blue Eyes.
That's what you called him. You had nicknames for all of us.
Hey, Coach, do you have an angry moment from the Dream that you're willing to share with us that perhaps nobody else knows about?
An angry moment?
Yeah, from Hakeem Olajuwon.
Like when Hakeem got angry?
Yeah.
Yeah, not that I can think of. I mean, he was very competitive. He did not like to be out of the game in the fourth quarter. And, you know, I had to rest him because we were going to him so much, so he was always anxious to get back in there, you know. And I'd hear him, and he'd be talking to the assistant coaches, you know, come on, come on. And but that's the gamble you got to play. You got to try to rest those guys so they could have something in the gas tank late in the game.
Well, Coach, I remember that San Antonio series. When they gave Robinson the MVP and all the guys in the locker room were pissed off and they were talking. And I remember Hakeem could have jumped in with them, and Clyde was really mad. And he looked at Clyde and he said, Drex, don't worry. We're going to get the bigger trophy. And everybody yep. just kind of stopped and relaxed and was like, well, if he's got that mentality, we're going to be all right.
Yeah, in fact, I asked Hakeem that question. I asked him, I said, I will always remember that scene with the commissioner giving the trophy. And in my mind's eye, I see myself sort of looking, and Hakeem is on my right, and I see those guys in the background, and I think, I wonder what he's thinking. So I asked him that, and he says, it's not like what people think. He said, I didn't deserve it that year. I had been out. I missed a lot of games. They had a great year. He deserved it. And I thought that was fantastic. And but then he did go out and prove that he was the best player in that series that year.
No question. And, Coach, now with Ramadan wrapping up, the other thing that I always say that's ironic that people don't realize is the fact that when Akeem used to play through games and he was so adamant, and Nick and I talk about this all the time, he wouldn't take water. He wouldn't take quench gum. He wouldn't do anything to help him through. And we would be waiting. The guys would be waiting with the food the minute the sun went down. But yet, I remember those afternoon NBC games where during Ramadan, no food, no water, no nothing, and he's putting 40 minutes in, and he's putting 30 and 15 on good teams, and we were just in complete awe of what he was able to do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, I have to admit, I took him for granted in those kind of situations. That is just truly amazing, especially with, you know, how people are into the nutrition and having to have things, you know, your fuel stores and all that stuff. What he did was truly amazing. And, you know, I'm feeling even luckier now when I think about all the obstacles he had to go through to get this stuff done.
Well, we know this. There's too many. First of all, because you're not on Zoom, it really disappoints me, because the next thing I was going to do was just throw it to you and say, so, Coach, I'd like you to sum up and tell us the story of you and Murph in your rookie year at training camp taking Elvin Hayes to the zoo.
Oh, my God. I can't do that to Elvin.
I said
I can't do it to Murph, too, because Murph, that was his story.
I was going to say, no one told it better than Murph at 3 a.m. on an airplane in a back-to-back, but that's the first time I was under the chairs laughing with tears in my eyes the way Murph told that story.
Oh, yeah, and when we came back from the zoo, he was in the lobby telling everybody, because we were on that trip with the Lakers, and he was grabbing Wilt Chamberlain and all these guys and telling them that story.
All right, the one you can tell, which I always think is amusing, too, is because – if you don't know, Akeem and Murph are going to induct Rudy into the hall. And Murph and Rudy were their family. They were roommates throughout their Rockets days. And the story I always love is when you guys used to sit there on the plane and tell us stories about rooming on the road. And you said you'd be in a city where the Murphys were in town. And before you know it, you got 11 Murphys sleeping in your room.
Oh, absolutely. I've woken up with his hands. You know, I thought it was a pillow and it was Aunt Frida.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Because yeah, Murph wasn't springing for the extra room, so the Murphys were sharing time and sleeping wherever there was a space.
That's absolutely right.
I feel like, you know, Murphy better than that. Like, when James Harden broke his record, do you think Murphy took it well, or do you think he was kind of, deep down, he was kind of bothered about losing that scoring record?
You know, I didn't even know that happened, but I can answer that.
Yes.
He didn't like it one
thing. No. Remember what he did with the free throws when he was trying to razz Michael Williams behind the basket? Murph's not going to hold punches. That's one guy that wants those records.
Yeah, he put a brutal curse on a guy who was going after his record.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I would say that you can speak to is the fact that pound for pound, he might have been the greatest fighter in NBA history.
He was. He was amazing. And, you know, he would warn these big guys when they started jawing at him. He says, you know, they say, I'm going to whoop your butt, Murph. He says, you know, I don't think that's a good choice for you. And they raised their hand, and before they tried to hit him, he'd hit him three or four times.
Yeah, he was unbelievable.
Wait a second. How tall is Calvin Murphy? So he's just looking up at these power forwards and centers, and he's saying, just go ahead. Come at me.
Oh,
and
he'd knock him out. Yeah, there's only he also wore 9 pair of socks. He does not. He will tell you.
That's right. So he was really like 5'6".
Yep, 5'6", because he wore 9 pair of socks.
Yep. But he had a picture of his fight with a 7-footer Dale Sluder, and it was up in his rec room, his pool room, and he would be bragging about it to the guys, you know, visiting shooting pool. And then one day we really looked at the picture, and it had this guy with his hands sort of down, and Merv throwing a left, at the guy's chin, and his right was ready to hit him in the belly. And we found that there were hands holding Sluder, so he was actually, like, tied up.
So it was like hitting a punching bag.
Murph was railing at him.
Well,
he said, oh, I never noticed that.
So, Coach, I we'll let you go because we appreciate all this time. But just kind of wrapping it up, your feelings about Houston and you know, Hamtramck, Michigan, and where you grew up and the University of Michigan and all of that. But the way you are going to be a legendary son of the city of Houston, the way the fans embraced even before the championships, but now how passionate they were about just making sure you got in the hall and how much love you should receive. The love affair between you and the city of Houston is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it truly is. And I didn't know what to think of Texas before I got here because I was one of those Yankees, you know, saying y'all and how's your mama and them down here? We were like, you know, you guys get over here. And it was different, but it took a week for me to find out how warm the people in Texas and Houston are. It's my home. It's, you know, it's I'll always be connected there, but I really want to thank the fans for being there for us. You know, we went through Choke City, and we still had fans pulling for us. And when we pulled into Hobby Airport, and there were thousands, which surprised the hell out of everybody, it was a feeling I don't have the words. And we just couldn't let those fans down. And when I'm up there, you know, receiving this honor, they are there with me. It was a complete community and, you know, just a fantastic experience for me to go through the whole Houston experience.
Well, I'll tell you what, Rudy. I mean, I was 10 when you guys won the first championship. I was 11 when you won the second championship. Myself and everybody on the Twitch that's chatting right now are saying, no, thank you. Thank Rudy. Because what those 2 years did for Houston, and especially a kid like me at 10 or 11 years of age, was unbelievable. So everybody wants to thank you. Thank you, Rudy, for bringing the two championships to this city.
And I'm going to take it a step further, Coach. And you know that I came as a punk kid that I was telling the story earlier in the show that everybody thought was there to get rid of Jim Foley and Bill Worrell, and I just kind of wanted to fit in. And the fact that my first big-time job was working for someone like you and the family that we had and the values that were instilled in me professionally and the memories that we got to share because of it and the fact that we're still friends to this day, I mean, you saw it with Facebook and everything. The level of passion that I felt to make sure that you got your due was simply because of, I know through and through, it's not just Rudy T, the coach or the ex-player or anything else. It's Rudy T, the person. And from me, from the bottom of my heart, I just wanted to say thank you for always making me feel like part of that family and really teaching me more than you'll ever know in terms of the business of basketball.
We didn't have bad apples in our organization. I mean, everybody did their part. We respected each other. I don't know about other organizations, but it was very, very special. And I consider you guys, you know, family members, brothers, and the biggest one of all was CD.
Oh, no question.
Brother, who convinced me we got to do this thing or else we're out of a job. You know, to be in the foxhole with your big brother, you know, gives you a feeling of security. And he was the best. And, you know, we used to sit and dream about these things, and the dreams came true. I'm so lucky. I'm really lucky.
Well, we appreciate you, Coach. You know I love you. I talked to CD. He said he's been trying to call you, but he's doing okay. I talk to him once a month. But you know that you got all of us with you when you go in, and we couldn't be happier for you.
Yeah, I talked to CD a couple days ago.
Good.
he won't be there, but he knows how much I love him.
Well, thank you, buddy, and we'll have to do this more often, but
thanks,
I know you
got to
hit him straight. Take care of the dogs and the family, and again, you've done us all proud.
Always my pleasure.
There you go. Rudy Tomjanovich headed to the hall, but he's always going to be Houston's favorite. So we appreciate the coach. We went a little long. We're going to catch up on some breaks, but we'll be back with you shortly. Don't go anywhere. It's the Press Box ESPN.